Welcome to Boxes and Lines, a different kind of finance podcast from a different kind of stock exchange, featuring IEX founder Ronan Ryan and Chief Market Policy Officer John Ramsey. Now here to give you the straight talk on how the markets really work, it's Ronan and JR.
Welcome, everybody, to the latest episode of Boxes and Lines.
Welcome to Boxes and Lines. I feel like we should be doing the Irish National Anthem.
I know. Well, I'm actually very excited about this podcast. Mm-hmm. Our friend of the firm, personal friend, Jerry O'Reilly from Vanguard is our guest, and he happens to be an Irish man who might run away when he hears your crap Irish accent. So hang with us, Jerry. Hang with us. I'll give you a quick intro. Jerry, for those in the industry, of course, know him. He's the manager of the Mehmet Trillion Dollar Plus Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund and ETF. Not only is he a distinguished figure in the financial world, but he's also an incredible athlete and was once an Olympian for my country and his country, Ireland, where he represented us in the 1500 meters 1988 Summer Olympics. We're not worried to have Jerry on this podcast, but welcome anyway, Jerry.
Thanks a million, Ronan. Thanks, John.
It is impressive. Mm-hmm. Forget all these financial accolades we've chucked to people before.
I know. We have certainly never had an Olympian on a podcast. Yes.
We have made it. We're going to get sponsorship out of this one, Jerry. Mm-hmm. But no, we really appreciate you being on. It's great. And we sort of kicked it off with John with his bad Irish accent. And we thought we'd start off in a little bit more personal front on this podcast before we get into work. And then obviously, you grew up in Ireland. How'd you end up in the U.S.
Let's
and
take a trip
running over
back
here?
To the old sod show.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Ronan, grew up in Ireland and at a young age got involved in running cross country and track and field. And then I would say probably mid-teenage years, I decided to concentrate just on track. I would play other games, you know, soccer, GAA and stuff like that. But 15, 16, decided to really concentrate on track. And I actually was doing quite well. So in high school, I was kind of at a national level. And I eventually won the Irish National Junior Track 1500 meter championships. And once that happened, it opened up all sorts of scholarship offers. That was 1983. And at the time, I had scholarship offers from multiple schools, and it was only in July that Villanova came through and offered me a scholarship. And of course, growing up in Ireland, Villanova was well known for people like Eamon Coghlan and Marcus O'Sullivan and Ronnie Delaney. And so when my mother and father heard Villanova was offering me a scholarship, that was it.
You're going.
I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
You put him on the boat.
Done deal.
Yeah. No, so Villanova's big. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. It was big. And came over here with my roommate at the time was a guy from Northern Ireland named Sean O'Neill. And Sean is a consultant for Bain in Chicago right now. But we were, you know, got on the train in New York and ended up in Villanova, PA. So that's how I ended up here.
We're not asking you to speak about the Olympics, but since you are likely to be the only Olympian we have on the podcast, I would love to just hear a little bit about your, I would assume that the amount of focus and dedication and practice and everything that one needs to devote in order to compete at that level has to be extraordinary. How did you sustain that? And what was your experience like in competing at that level?
Yeah. I mean, John, for me, it actually went back to when I was a 12-year-old and I was watching the 1976 Olympics and there was a guy from Ireland named Eamon Coghlan, and he was the guy that we thought was going to win the gold medal in the 1500 in Montreal. And so they had all sorts of documentaries on him before the Olympics. And I remember watching it as a, you know, as I said, as a 12-year-old and thinking, it just planted a seed with me. I remember reading about the fact that, or hearing on TV that, you know, you could actually go to university, get a scholarship and run, and the university would pick up the tab. And I was kind of blown away as a 12-year-old to hear that. So that planted a seed with me. And then for years and years after that, you know, I lived out in the country and I'd go for runs after school by myself. But in my mind, I was running Olympic finals and, you know, could visualize all these guys around me on these dark country roads. And, you know, all the way up to Villanova, even when I was a freshman there, I was always thinking like, what if I'm lucky enough to make it to the Olympics? So not unusual when you're running at a place like Villanova to be, you know, training twice a day in the fall, 80, 90, 100 miles a week, twice a day, you know, as I said, and long runs on Sundays in addition to racing on Saturday. And by my junior, senior year, I started to run some good times. I ran a 3:54 for the mile when I broke 4 minutes for the first time. And all of a sudden then, making the Olympic team became something like, this could happen. And as it so happens, one of my teammates was Marcus O'Sullivan, and Marcus was a world-class miler, 1500 meter guy at the time. Yep. And it was great to be able to train with someone like that. And eventually in 1988, I got the qualifying time in Rieti in Italy and was fortunate enough to be picked for the Irish Olympic team. And the experience was incredible, just to be in an Olympic village and being surrounded by world-class athletes that you'd only ever seen on TV. And just being part of that just was an incredible experience.
And remind us, 88 was where?
Seoul, Korea.
Oh, got it.
So that was the one, unfortunately, that's probably best known for Ben Johnson, who was the Canadian 100-meter runner who won the 100-meter final and only to be stripped of the title 2 days later for testing positive for steroids. So that it got a lot of attention.
Give John some context. Obviously, Jerry said Eamon Coughlan was sort of like a cult hero in Ireland, and the mile was, you know, remember the Olympics used to be even bigger in the U.S., but the 100-meter, Carl Lewis and all that stuff was the big one, but to run for Ireland in the mile was a massive deal. I was not as good as Jerry, but I ran cross country in college, Division I over here, and I used to think I was good till I looked at Jerry's times.
Yeah,
and Jerry would smoke me and still would, but you know, while we're rubbing salt on wounds, I thought I'd make fun of him for being an Arsenal fan when my team, Liverpool, are doing better just marginally. So
marginally better, yeah.
Marginally.
2 points
we'll see.
Better, yeah.
It's a three-horse race in the Premiership this year. And like I said to Jerry last week when we were talking about this podcast, I said, I'm not going to wish you luck this weekend, but you won.
It turns
anyway,
out we didn't need it, right? It was 6-0 we won against Sheffield. So I was running out of toes to count the score.
Well, let's move it along because this all like foreign language.
John just liked the Olympics, but when you get really into sports, he just totally lost. Well, ladies and gentlemen, Jerry O'Reilly. Now, let's go to professional career. You've been at Vanguard since the beginning, right?
I've been at Vanguard. I will be at Vanguard 32 years in about 2 weeks. So I started in March of 1992. Started off entry-level position at Vanguard, and after about 2 years, I ended up getting a job working on the trading desk as an assistant trader back when the whole group was, at the time, was known as core management, and we might have had 10 or 11 people. Gus Sauter ran the group, and Mike Buick, was the head trader on the desk. But that's where I started.
To this podcast. We'll send it to him.
Yeah.
No, great stuff. So, I mean, I guess one thing we want to touch upon, there's people not in the industry who listen to this podcast, but those in the industry will know, like, Vanguard's very different. When you're covering Vanguard from the sell side or we're an exchange, you guys like wear two hats. Like you behave as both trader and PM.
Yeah,
that's correct, right?
And it is.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, traditional model probably has a portfolio manager, and he or she sits in the corner office and sends trades out to the desk, and then the desk, you know, takes them and they go ahead and trade them. And we think sometimes something can get lost between the PM and the trader. So the model that we have, the PM and trader are one and the same. So, for example, when I generate a list, I know exactly what the urgency is on the names that I've generated. Is it for an index change where there might be a high level of urgency? Or is this just maybe a tail of the total stock market fund where I'm trading, you know, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th decile names that I might have on my blotter for a week? I'm purely opportunistic. So once you know what the urgency level is, you're able to marry that up with whatever the appropriate strategy might be. So we think it gives us a lot of insight there. We're also able to react really quickly to news when it hits. So we might be expecting an index change to happen on Friday, and all of a sudden something changes, they get some kind of approval, it's going to go through tonight. We can immediately generate that order and probably get it out the door in a minute or two. Whereas if you're relying on a portfolio manager to give you the okay to trade that,
The
news is already in the stock and it's off to the races, and you kind of miss that.
I assume that it has to be, given the scale of the fund that you're trading for, that there are even very small nuanced differences in terms of these decisions that you're making can be enormously consequential.
Absolutely. We manage, Vanguard is at $8.7 trillion in assets, and our desk is about 25 traders on the desk, both on the domestic side, international. We manage a little over $5 trillion. So even tiny, basis points changes, John, huge notional dollars that need to be traded. And that's, you know, I think we've got a team on the desk. We've probably got average tenure about 13 years. So you've got folks like myself and Mike Perry who've been there 30 plus years, along with newer people, but on average about 13. So we're very familiar with how to handle trades, large notional dollars, how to kind of trade off between, you know, keeping your tracking error very tight and also not having too much impact on the names that you're trading. And so very, very good group that we work with, very much a team kind of collaborative type of atmosphere on the desk.
And obviously, I'm very much steeped in kind of the Vanguard culture and kind of interested to get your thoughts about that too. One of our prior guests was Eric Balchunas, if I didn't screw up that.
Yeah, I know Eric,
Who had, written a really interesting biography of Jack Bogle.
I can't believe you remember the second name.
There you go.
That always stymies him, Jerry.
Yeah.
Sorry, he's mad at me, listeners.
Yeah, all right.
Sorry, ask your question.
Please, Jerry, please just try to ignore him as best you can. He talked a lot on the podcast about, you know, Bogle's vision and kind of his vision about the kind of financial company that he wanted to create and how he wanted it to be different. And there is a really unique culture, and you've obviously been there for a long time. So interested to get your thoughts about
that. Yeah, I mean, listen, what he created was unbelievable. And I think it starts with the ownership structure. So there is no Vanguard stock. You know, we are, John, if you or Ronan had an investment in Vanguard, technically you're an owner of Vanguard. So everything we do, you're always asking yourself, is this in the best interest of our investors? Yeah. And so that's kind of the bedrock of Vanguard, is doing things that are in the best interest of our investors. And it is a company that we're close to 20,000 employees now. You know, when I got there, I think it was maybe 2,000, primarily here in Malvern. We've also got Scottsdale and in Charlotte, North Carolina as well. And the investment operations here in Malvern, as I said, is about 25, but we also have trading desks in London and also in Melbourne. And, you know, what Mr. Bogle created basically was an investment firm that was very focused on costs. So offering world-class investment products at low cost. So when I started, maybe the expense ratio, which is what it costs to manage the funds, was probably in the 30, 35 basis points. And today the average expense ratio at Vanguard is 8 basis points. And the total stock market fund, Rona, that you mentioned, has an expense ratio of 4 basis points. And the ETF is actually 3 basis points. So just think about that. You can invest $10,000 in a broadly diversified domestic U.S. mutual fund. And we're going to charge you $4 for every $10,000 that you invest. And so you're going to get that type of exposure. And the great thing is that you're going to outperform 85-90% of active managers. There might be a few that'll outperform over 1 year. If you stretch that to 5 or 10 years, it gets smaller and smaller. So you're getting the return of the US benchmark. And just look at the incredible bull market that we've been on. So one of the great things about the seat that I sit on is that there are investors who are making decisions about whether it's putting kids through college, their retirement, whatever it might be, that are investing in our funds. And it is, I think, a great way to save for those types of things. And we've seen the benefits in terms of the cash flows that's coming into our funds. So people really believe that low-cost passive investment should be a central way that they invest for these type of events.
I have a question for you, Jerry. So obviously, you know, personally, I think you're a great guy. And you talked about your desk there. There's always a great culture when I, as a broker, I have exchange, have visited Malvern, and then you're referring to him as Mr. Bogle with reverence, which that's pretty telling in and of itself. So I know you sort of yourself manage 1.5 trillion yourself. And like, that just seems like such an astronomical number. Like what's color on your typical trading day, like managing that fund? Like what's that like?
So obviously that fund is the beneficiary of lots of cash flows. And the way that we have the fund set up is that there are different share classes in the fund. You can buy the ETF, which is VTI, or you can buy the mutual fund itself. In terms of just managing the fund, Ronan, while the assets are huge, one of the really great benefits of indexing is low turnover. So turnover basically is the lesser of buys and sells divided by the average assets. On a typical year, total stock markets turnover is less than 10%. Active managers, it's not unusual to see turnover at the 70, 80% level. Yeah. So even though the assets in the fund are incredibly high, there's not that much turnover in the fund. So we have a rebalances coming up on a quarterly basis. two-way turnover is around 1%. So very, very manageable. And even when I get cash flows into that fund, there's about 3,900 securities in it. I'm running a trade list and I'm trading 1,200, 1,500 names. So it's very easy to trade that. And even days, Ronan, when I have huge cash flows, like let's say I had $2 billion that came into the fund. If you look at that, you think, wow, that's going to be impactful. But it's really not, because on an average day in the US, you probably have 550, 600 billion that trades. My $2 billion, and especially trading in that last 45 minutes of the day, which is the most liquid time of the day, very easy for the market to absorb that $2 billion. So there are, of course, lots of challenges, lots of index changes that happen, lots of corporate actions. But what we try to do on the desk is it possible for us to eat into that expense ratio, even though it is low at 4 basis points for the mutual fund? And last year, we were able to add 7 basis points over the course of the year. And it was a combination of security lending, which is separate from us, but also, you know, syndicate offerings, complex corporate actions, and also just proprietary trading techniques that are able to pick up fractions of a basis point. And in total, over the course of the year, it added to 7 basis points. So if you were in that fund, in effect, you got the fund not only for free, but you actually got a little kicker on top of that of 3 basis points.
Yeah, I was going to joke. You often hear people refer to your VTI ETF as commission-free or getting paid for owning them. So you're making more money than even the low management fee that you charged.
That's right.
Incredible.
Yeah. Now, it's not guaranteed. If there's opportunities there, we're going to certainly explore them. But, you know, you're not going to just take a shot for the sake of taking a shot. If they're not there, then you're not going to have that. But last year was one of the better years for sure.
Very good.
John. Awesome. Shall we pivot perhaps to market structure reform?
Yes, that would be great.
Yeah,
great.
Very, very well.
This is Mr. Ramsey's bailiwick.
Jerry, obviously you understand the markets very well from a trading perspective, but that also gives you a unique perspective on kind of the rules that govern the equity markets. And as most folks who listen to our podcast know, the SEC has a lot of proposals that are out to change the rules around the equity markets. The ones we have here at IEX have focused on most are those to update what is called Regulation NMS, but sort of the key guideposts around how it is, the tick size that people have to honor, the access fees to access exchange liquidity, minimum trading increments, et cetera. And you guys at Vanguard have been in the vanguard of...
I'm sorry for him, Jerry.
expressing your views on these issues. So could you say a little bit about that, about your perspective on the need to update the rules to meet modern conditions and specific aspects of those that you sure. think are worth updating?
Well, John, as you mentioned, we're updating rules that go back to 2005, 2007, I think, when Reg NMS was implemented. So just think about how market structure has changed since then. I've been on the desk long enough where I remember the first thing you did was you learned your teeny tables. And then we went decimalization, and then we went electronic, kind of replacing. And there's been so many changes. I remember back in the early days, you had basically New York and NASDAQ, and they were the only game in town. And now you've got 16 exchanges, including IEX. So it's a very different environment today than what it was back then. And I think it's long overdue that we updated some of the rules. Regarding the current SEC proposals, I think there's, general agreement on the 605, which is some standardization in terms of reporting execution quality. And it's probably more on the retail side of the business. But the one I think that we rolled up our sleeves on was the one that you mentioned, which was regarding the tick proposal, the access fees, and the market data infrastructure rule. And so on those things, I think there's no question that there are stocks out there, and we would refer to those as tick constrained stocks. And the only reason they're trading at a penny wide tick is because Reg NMS says it has to be a penny. And those names, and we would define tick constrained names as names that are trading at a penny at large bids and offers. And if there was some smaller tick increment, they would likely go to that. And so our suggestion would be, the SEC talked about going to 0.5 cent, 0.2 cent, and maybe even 0.1 cent on some of these. And we think that going to 0.5 cent makes a lot of sense. I think when you slice it thinner than 0.5 cent, you start to get some negative impacts on the market. And for us, going to 0.1 or 0.2 cent, I think what you're going to have is people jumping in front of your orders out there. I think it's going to hurt top of book liquidity. And I think, if anything, it's going to lead to more liquidity going off exchange. And so I would be in favor of, I think Vanguard would be in favor of going to a half a cent on tick and taking a look at it at some period down the road. And if there are still some names that we feel are still tick constrained at a half a cent, let's reevaluate at that time.
Yeah.
The access fee that you referred to, John, that's been 30 mils. It feels like forever. And our concern would be that it impacts brokers in terms of where they post liquidity. Are they posting in the venues that is paying the highest rebate? And, you know, when you're talking about access fees of 30 mils and rebates of 27 mils, you could see how economics would play into it rather than what's in my best interest. So we think a substantial reduction in the access fee would be good. And also on the market data infrastructure proposal, the current SIP, it's not adequate in terms of, you know, 100 share round lot, no depth of book, no market information. We think the sooner we could get that adopted, I think the better. So they would be the ones that we're really, I think, in favor of. There is a best X proposal as well as you know, on the retail side, our brokerage side of the shop, they would be required to potentially go to exchanges. We didn't voice as much on those ones, but on the 605 and on the access fees and tick proposals, we have put our letter out there.
Yeah, and the way that I think we look at it, and maybe this is a little simplistic, but it tracks what you just said, is that considering any of these changes, what the commission should be guided by is what the changes are that most directly serve the interests of investors, based in part on what they've said their interests are and what they're concerned about. But, you know, you talked about the tick size. One of the reasons arguments for, you know, going to a half cent is, I assume you would agree, the institutional investors actually would be interested in trading in those increments.
Yes.
They don't see much, I would assume, institutional investors don't see much advantage in trading at much finer increments than that, because that just sort of gives advantage to people who can use speed in various different ways.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that, Ronan?
We're very much in agreement.
Yes.
Very
all right. There you go.
Jerry said it beautifully.
Thank you.
So we're going to go on to two hot topics or soup du jours, right? So AI and crypto. Let's go AI first.
Let's do.
Jerry, what's your stance on AI, when it's useful in finance, when it's not? Or Vanguard stance or whatever, either stance.
Yeah, I mean it's pretty much been all over the place, right?
So
I would say on AI, so we have a quantitative group within Vanguard called QEG, Quantitative Equity Group, and they use AI, and it basically allows them to overlay traditional quant strategies with components of AI, particularly linguistic and data analysis, and that helps their strategies adapt to changing economic and market conditions. So, you know, our chief economist, Joe Davis, has said that AI could be as transformative as electricity. So just think about that for a second in terms of, you know, the impact that electricity had. Now, it's still very early. If this was a baseball game, I think we're in the second inning. So it's got a long way to go. But there are aspects, if you look at just from my seat, things like portfolio optimization, automation, these are things, the ability to get maybe low notional dollar trade lists out the door without even spending any time really thinking about it, low ADV type names, just put them to bed to give us time to maybe focus on more value add strategies. That's one thing I can think of. In terms of things we need to be concerned about, it's not perfect. You know, you have things like generative chatbots like ChatGPT. They have been, I think the technical term is hallucination, which is, you know, the output is just incorrect. So we see AI, I think, as more of a complementary rather than kind of a substitute for human traders. Ron, we talked about last week about the issue with Lyft, right, which had the press release with the extra zero in there. And you had these algos just probably reading the headline. And all of a sudden, that stock was up 62% in after-hours trading. And I think when humans got involved and started thinking, well, wait a minute, this doesn't quite feel right, and the company got out there, all of a sudden that stock came all the way back in to where it was almost prior to the announcement. So you just have to be careful with what you use. Obviously, there's some concerns about, you know, protecting people's privacy, and that's really important here.
Crazy.
I know at Vanguard. Yeah.
It's a great point. It's like it's sort of like I believe it was a sloppy human error on their behalf, but the impact was massive.
Yeah.
Till humans came back and fixed it again. Long live the humans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, definitely. I'm all for that. We're not eager to be replaced by bots anytime soon.
Yes. You want to touch upon crypto?
Sure.
Vanguard, I know, has historically been fairly cautious towards cryptocurrency, right? But
yep.
As of late, there's quite a surge in Bitcoin's value. It continues to go up, and a lot of it's tied to the adoption of the spot Bitcoin ETFs by Fidelity and BlackRock. And there seems to be growing acceptance of crypto in mainstream investment landscape. Sort of again, right? Like a couple of years ago it was, then it dissipated. But could you elaborate on Vanguard's current position on cryptocurrency and how the company is navigating that market?
So we do not offer Bitcoin or any crypto products on our retail platform. And the reason is, when we think about it, we have a thoughtful kind of data-driven approach to building our investment lineup. So for us, there's a couple of things that it needs to check the box on. Does it have investment merit, and does it meet clients' needs over the long term? And when we look at that, we don't believe that crypto has an appropriate role in that framework. So we have not included it. We have no plans to include it. It's very different, Ronan, to the type of investments that we offer. You think about equities. You own a company, right? You've got that produces goods and services, also potentially pays dividends. When you think about bonds, you get a stream of interest payments, commodities. They're real assets that meet consumption demand and they have an inflation hedge. We don't see that with crypto. So it does not fit into our framework. And I don't see that changing anytime soon.
You're not looking to come up with new products that will allow people to speculate in various kinds of ways.
No, and John, so that's the thing. I think we would view crypto and Bitcoin more in the speculation bucket than in the investment bucket. So I don't see that changing. Obviously, the easy thing to do would have been, make it available to everyone, but we don't believe in it. So we're going to be honest and do what we think is in the best interest of our shareholders, of investors.
Good for you.
Very good. You truly are a vanguard.
You are in the vanguard. It's a vanguard. In the vanguard.
I will thump you.
Jerry, I have to say, it's a measure of, I'm sure, the respect that Ronan has for you. He has not dropped the F-bomb once during our podcast, which I think may be a first.
I don't want to get Jerry in trouble at Vanguard.
Yeah, well, that's good.
I'm on best behavior. Once we hang up here, I'm just going to scream.
He's going to unload.
All this pent-up demand.
You have no idea. You want to ask our fun question, John?
Oh, yeah. We've got a fun question.
Yeah.
Figure out what it is. Yes. So, Jerry, if you could give a one-sentence piece of financial advice to your younger self, what would that be?
Well, it's actually related to what we're just talking about, because if I was to give advice to a young Ronan Ryan back in Dublin, I'd say, if you were to put $10 in a low-cost index mutual fund for every swear word you uttered, you'd be retired already, Ronan.
I certainly would.
You'd be retired.
You would be a very, very rich
just
man.
Just so the audience knows. Rich to put that money in the first place.
Whenever Ronan comes in to give an update on what's going on at IEX, we have an over-under we set. And that over-under has been as high as 6 or 7. I don't think anyone who's ever bet the under has won.
Well, it's funny. I couldn't make the last call, and I heard at the end of the call in summation, Jerry missed some of the F-bombs.
So, Ronan will save them all up for his next meeting with you guys, and doesn't want to disappoint anyone.
What does Jerry get for subjecting himself to our podcast?
Oh, God. I hope better than something more than a freaking pair of socks. I don't know. No, but we do. We have lovely socks, don't we?
We give our guests on Boxes and Lines a very special pair of their very own IEX Boxes and Lines socks that you can wear with pride.
Excellent.
And that may not sound like much, but they're very comfortable and we think very, very attractive.
My sister, who listens to this podcast, makes fun of me as to how much I pitch our socks, but they are very comfortable socks. And a lot of times when you give vendor socks, they are crap. Not the IEX Box and Line socks.
Not the IEX. We also have a variety of liquor and beer products, but we can't.
We have to smuggle them to Melbourne.
Yeah, we'll have to put them in the back of Ronan's car.
The socks are all good.
In the trunk, he'll deliver them.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, we absolutely appreciate you being a guest, and hopefully we'll have you as a return guest. You're a natural. Besides your love of Arsenal, everything else about you I love. So.
Well, listen, Ronan and John, it's been a pleasure. And Ronan, as you know, we go way back to your RBC days. And I still recall the day that you and Brad came in and talked about this venture you were undergoing. And I think When you guys left, if I'm being honest, Buke and I looked at each other and they were, well, there goes Ronan. and here you are, I don't know how many years, 20 years later. But so yeah, congrats crazy. To the great work. Yeah.
Well, you've been a good friend to us and a good friend to the investors that you represent. And we are so happy to have the opportunity.
Thank you both.
Cheers, boxes and lines.
Do your bless over and out.
There you go. He sounds just like our mothers, doesn't he? Terrible. Are you a diehard boxer or liner, or just a fair weather fan? No judgments. I know how annoying JR's Irish accent can be. Either way, we want to hear from you on our new Boxes and Lines listener survey to find out what you think about the show, give input on future episodes, guests, and more. We'll take it back to our survey counter thingy machine and consider all of your inputs as we plan our 2024 season. You can find the survey at iex.getfeedback.com/boxesandlines. And don't worry, there's something in it for you. That's my drum roll. JR could probably do it better. You get a pair of socks. That's right. Take the survey. We'll send you a pair of our coveted Box and Line socks while supplies last in a new limited edition print. How's that for listener appreciation? So take the survey, tell us what you think, and thanks for listening. Again, that's iex.getfeedback.com/boxesandlines. Over and out.
Boxes and Lines is a podcast from IEX Exchange. It is hosted by Ronan Ryan and John Ramsey. Executive produced by Daisy Clace, with support from Benstown. For more information and to hear more episodes, go to iexexchange.io/podcast. Thank you for listening to Boxes and Lines. The information and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational and educational purposes only, and IEX Group Incorporated and its affiliates do not make any representations or warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Nothing in this podcast constitutes a solicitation or offer to buy or sell any securities or provide any investment advice or service. Some portions of the preceding conversation may have been edited for length or clarity. Copyright IEX Group Incorporated, all rights reserved.